This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, August 2nd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us in the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Job seekers are facing increasing pressure as the employment market cools. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the government jobs report for July is the economic headliner today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Gus, thank you for joining us today. For the month of July, the federal government says 114,000 new jobs, unemployment rising to 4.3%, both numbers below analysts' expectations. What were the particular areas of weakness in this report?
We saw slower job growth throughout the economy, and in fact, we had more industries losing jobs than adding jobs in July. That being said, we did see small job losses in manufacturing, and in information, which is things like internet companies and so forth. So, the weakness was pretty broad based across the economy, and not as good as the numbers we've been seeing earlier in 2024.
Now there were some weather-related disruptions in this report, especially from Hurricane Beryl as it hit Texas and the Gulf Coast and made its way up into the Chicago area last month. Now, I mean, did that play a role in some of the weak numbers we saw today?
The Bureau of Labor Statistics said that was not the case, so we'll get a better sense of that when we get the state data later in the month, but it doesn't look like Beryl had much of an impact. I think this is just a reflection of slower economic growth and a labor market that is gradually softening.
We're talking about the July jobs report with Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Now, this does create a balancing act for the Fed. They just decided earlier this week to decide to elect to keep interest rates where they are at least one more time before indicating the door was open to cutting interest rates later this year, as early as September. Well, how does that change the Fed's calculus going forward that we're now seeing some pronounced weakness in the job market?
Yeah, this is one month of softer data. We still had decent employment growth in May and June. By the time the Fed meets in mid-September, they'll have gotten the jobs report for August. So if the August report is like this one, then maybe we see the Fed cut by a half of a percentage point, or maybe we see the Fed cut in September, November, December. Alternatively, if the August report still looks pretty good and we see a rebound in job growth, then the Fed may hold off and say, we'll cut in September, but then we'll wait until December. So they still have some flexibility there. And if conditions are deteriorating quickly in the labor market, then they have the ability to cut rates rapidly.
Now, we do have some people, analysts, throwing around the R word, recession, based on this jobs report for the month of July. But taking a look at the Atlanta GDP Nowcast, their estimate of current economic activity, it's still a rather healthy 2%. So it seems like there's a long way to go before you get to contraction.
That's right. Consumer spending continues to do quite well. Consumers are out there traveling. They're out there buying things at restaurants. We did have a drop in auto sales in the second quarter because of the problems with CDK Global and the cyber attack, but I'd expect to see a rebound there. So I think overall the economy looks pretty solid still. We continue to see economic growth, and I think we will see lower interest rates over the next few months that will also support economic growth. So I don't think we're close to a recession yet. Certainly that potential is out there if the labor market softens further, but I don't expect to see one at least in 2024.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us today.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's getting harder to get hired. Let's get the latest now on the job market from Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And not too long ago, we were having discussions about what you could potentially demand from a new employer during the Great Resignation. There was a lot of job switching. There was so much tightness in the job market. You could walk into a business and basically say, you know, pay me $500,000 a year, just check my email 1 hour a week. And it seems like those days are gone.
They definitely are gone. Hiring has definitely stabilized, but it is still happening. Companies are just being much more selective. You're right. Employees can't just walk in the door and demand whatever they want. You know, companies, while there's still a great demand for talent out there, companies being so much more selective, they're just paying closer attention to everything, your resume, your experience, your work ethic, your dedication, all of those things.
Now, if you spend more than 5 minutes on LinkedIn, you will see all manner of hiring and recruiting horror stories from people who, you know, got to this a seventh round of interviews before being told no, to people who say they had spent a year filling out dozens of online job applications and not getting a single nibble. Is this a result of the job market itself, or is this a function of the job seeker needing to change their strategy?
Well, I think it's a little of both, right? For the job seekers, if you're, you know, you're just specifically going after one avenue for your job search, you've got to open up your resources today. Because job, you know, hiring has stabilized, you've got to go back to every resource that you have. Connections, who do you know, friends, family, even connecting with staffing firms that maybe in the past you thought you didn't need, but all of a sudden today might open up some doors or resources for you. I mean, we ourselves made over 48 placements last month. So those are more avenues open to someone in that job search. But from a company perspective, they're just a bit more cautious today about where they spend their money, who they hire. You know, yes, they went through the Great Resignation where they had people take jobs and then quickly leave jobs. And so they're just so much more thoughtful about the process of hiring and making sure that they have the right hire. Sometimes that process is too long. We do encourage them to speed them up if they do find good talent. But yes, there's a lot of work put into the job search today, both from a company and candidate perspective.
We're talking about how you can find a job in a cooling job market with Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert, Robert Half Company in Chicago. How should you use a resource like LinkedIn or Indeed, a site that has a lot of job listings? Should you use that as your main portal for looking for a job, or should you just consider those online listings as a kind of a good, just a general, you know, gives you a good sense of who's hiring and who's not?
Yeah, I think they're a great sense. You know, the online world is so visible and easy. You're going to want to use them two avenues, A, to see what is open and out there. I mean, the research we show, 52% of U.S. companies plan to add new positions in the second half of the year. So there are definitely job openings out there. But then also use it to make your connections, to ask for, you know, references or validation. If someone's worked for you, even if it's a college professor that can speak on your behalf regarding your work ethic, you want all of that present. A lot of companies do look at online resources when they're evaluating candidates. And so, you know, it should definitely be a very visible part of your job search process.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, a preview of the fall home buying season.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Spring is traditionally the busiest time of the year for home buying and selling, but there are also some solid reasons to make a move in the fall. We welcome in Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thanks for joining us today, and we talk about moving in the fall. What makes that season so attractive compared to spring and summer?
I love this question, and I love the concept of you know, people kind of shifting in some of the change. I mean, there's several reasons. I mean, one of them I'm seeing is there's definitely a lot less competition out there. People are also, you know, the sellers are a little bit more worn out. They've you know, had their house up for a while, so they're definitely kind of worn out with letting this thing sit for a period of time and not getting any offers. And I think also, too, the sellers that are really selling in that fall market, they're serious because they've either got to move because of a job, they want to get in, you know, out of there before the holidays so they can move into their new home, their house is being built. It's believe it or not, it's a safer time of the year, which is kind of an interesting concept too. And really for the professionals, the realtors and mortgage companies, title companies like myself, that we consider that not to be our busy time. So we're going to put more focus and attention on you as a home buyer as well. And then, you know, you get the end of the year discounts as you get closer to the holidays. So if you're going to, you know, remodel your house, if you're going to decorate your house, you have all those wonderful opportunities as well.
And also just from a nuts and bolts and moving standpoint, why not move in a month that's cooler than spring and summer potentially? I mean, I moved into my current house in July, and it was hot and sunny the entire time, and that was a very sweaty process, Drew. So why not take advantage of more comfortable temperatures in October?
Yeah, that's a fact. I mean, realistically, you're going to be able to, you know, find movers and find all of the services that you're going to need probably a little bit easier because, you know, the majority of the folks that are doing these moves are trying to get in before the kids start school. And sorry, it is June. It's July and August. You know what that looks like in Chicago. It's, you know, it's definitely warm.
Now, how could the interest rate activity that we're seeing today and could potentially see later in this year, how could that distort the housing market in the fall of 2024? Because as of today, the 30-year fixed is kind of plummeting into the 6.5 range. And if the Fed cuts potentially up to a point by the end of the year, is that going to change the calculus in the housing market?
It really should, because with that lower interest rate, you're going to now start to see some of the folks kind of coming out of the woodwork to say, okay, you know what, now I'm going to go ahead and sell the house, as well as, you know, that's going to increase the inventory. But then the buyers are now going to have a new look at some fresh homes and some more inventory to make some choices there. So this is naturally going to just default and put you into that fall market of buying. So I think this could be a really good encouraging uptick for what we're hoping and what we've been hoping to have happened already. So I think this is going to be a really interesting thing to watch, keep our eye on, because to your point, the market or the interest rates have already come down some, and we've already started to see a little bit of an uptick in some of the, you know, refinances. I think that's going to be what we'll see too, is those folks that are sitting still will probably, you know, refinance those newly bought homes if they did that recently.
Drew Wishover, founder and owner of the Inspired Title Group in Chicago.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Vice President Kamala Harris now has the votes to become the Democratic nominee for president. A special report coming up from CBS News. In Entrepreneur Friday, we meet a Chicago jewelry designer inspired by nature and multiple cultures, and a closely watched recession indicator has been triggered. We'll talk about the implications. WBBM Business. Markets are lower. The Dow was down 862 points. The NASDAQ is down 478. The S&P 500 is down 126. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, warm and humid, more clouds than sunshine, a sprinkle in spots, a high of 86, closer to 80 along the lakefront, 80 at O'Hare, 77 degrees at Midway, 77 at the lakefront. It's 1231.
CBS News Special Report. Vice President Kamala Harris has secured enough votes to secure the Democratic presidential nomination.
I am honored to be the presumptive Democratic nominee for President of the United States. And I will tell you the tireless work of our delegates, our state leaders and staff has been pivotal in making this moment possible.
Harris will soon decide her choice for running mate. Here's CBS's Finn Gomez on the vetting process.
Josh Shapiro, Pete Buttigieg, and Andy Beshear all had scheduling changes for this weekend, which seems to indicate that it's part of this process.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg at Ivy Tech Community College in Kokomo, Indiana today.
So it is thrilling, and I think a little bit poetic, for me to have the privilege of being here now on behalf of President Biden and Vice President Harris in this administration.
Buttigieg is a former Indiana mayor. CBS News Special Report. I'm Linda Kenyon.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are sharply lower today. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gary Culpaum, President, Culpaum Capital Management in Orlando. Mark, it's a pretty grim tale the markets are telling today. The Dow down 864 points, the NASDAQ down 474, the S&P 500 down 127, 2% decline in the three major indices this afternoon. Is this entirely off of the July jobs report missing expectations, or are there some other factors at play?
This started July 11th. And the best way I can explain it, I probably need a half hour to do it, but in the short version, the market over the past couple of weeks started telegraphing a serious slowdown in economic growth. And we had some points come out, the ISM, the manufacturing and services. I mean, they're basically recessionary numbers, but the one thing that has held up pretty well is the job market. And today, we found out that may be falling off a ledge, too. So it's shoot first, ask questions later. And the biggest problem we have right now is when inflation was skyrocketing and the Fed was staying at 0% and saying it was transitory, they had to play catch-up to what they didn't see. The Fed is now, their interest rate's at 5.5%. The 10-year yield is at 3.8% and plunging, and screaming to the Fed that they have to take their foot off the pedal. And guess what? On Wednesday, he didn't. The market recognized it, so you're seeing it now.
And that means when we get to the September meeting, assuming they don't take action before then, they would go from maybe a quarter point cut, which had been predicted before, to maybe cutting rates by a half a point in September and again in November. So instead of being a little bit of relief for people holding and financing debt, that sends another recessionary signal, potentially.
Yeah, well, let me guarantee a few things. This weekend, if not sooner, you're going to have a bunch of central bankers come out jawboning, and they're going to start saying, we're going to have rate cuts, we're going to have rate cuts, we're going to have rate cuts, and we're going to have more than one rate cut in order to try and stabilize the market. Going forward into September 18th, the next announcement, if the stock market stabilizes, they can fend off lowering rates in between meetings. But if the market continues heading south in a meaningful fashion, in a headline fashion, I expect them to come out with some sort of statement and then lower interest rates. If I was given the job of central banker today, I'd be at 4.5%, not 5.5%, and I'd still be above the real market, the free market that matters most, at 3.8%. So they need to start getting in line, or else.
We're talking about today's market activity with Gary Culpaum, President Culpaum Capital Management in Orlando. The other story that seems to be making itself apparent this week is that the tech sector, after running so far and for so long and carrying the market for nearly 2 years, people are starting to stop and catch their breath and really take a hard look at the potential of AI and just the amount of money that's been spent on it, and if you're going to start seeing returns from it.
Okay, so on July 11th, we sold most of our technology, and we sold the rest a few days later. Our thought process was twofold. Number one, the top six stocks of the, and this is amazing numbers, top six stocks in the S&P made up 30% of the S&P 500, all big tech. The top eight stocks made up almost 50% of the NASDAQ 100. How do you get there? Piling on by the big institutions, which means they're owning too much at the end of the road. The other problem, and this is the fundamental side, we've seen it so often when things are so hyped and touted, you get over-ordering of semiconductors because you think you need so many. And then what happens if it doesn't come to fruition? The big word glut comes to mind, and that's where earnings and sales fall off a cliff. I'm not saying that's happening. I'm just saying they've had a big run, and it's something we have to watch. Why? because semiconductors are in everything. And if the economy's slowing, guess what potentially happens? And one, I'll just give you one name, Mobileye, big time chips for autos. Stocks crashed recently. Why? Not selling autos as well. So there's a 1+1=2 going on. And boy, oh boy, not a bad time to be as defensive can be.
Gary Kaltbaum, President, Kaltbaum Capital Management in Orlando. Thank you for joining us today. Find him online at GaryK.com. Coming up next, an Entrepreneur Friday, unique jewelry from a business owner with many interests.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Actually, it's 12:40, and it's Entrepreneur Friday. This afternoon, we're speaking with the owner of a Chicago jewelry design company who has a very wide range of influences and interests. We welcome in Alex Agudo, owner of Mansour Pamplemousse, 410 South Michigan Avenue in Chicago. Alex, thank you for joining us today. And before we talk about how you got into the jewelry business, we have to talk about your hobby in high school, which really is, Alex, kind of your origin story.
That is correct. And thank you so much for having me, Rob. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm talking to you.
Well, thank you. So, yeah, no, actually, that's one of the main things that started my little journey in jewelry making. I started making it in 2002 when I was still in high school, and it became like a creative outlet. I wanted to be able to channel some emotions and things that were difficult for me to, you know, be able to communicate via words. So I found that art was like my therapy, which is art therapy, of course. And it was a good way for me to show my emotions and through art that sometimes words can't sometimes be able to, you know, interpret or be able to communicate.
Now, Alex, you're kind of a man for all seasons. I mean, you were born in Chicago. You live most of your childhood in Ecuador. You're a dancer, a florist, a photographer, an art teacher, and a historian, and you know a bunch of languages. So you could have done a whole, you could have settled on any number of disciplines, and yet you wanted to design jewelry. And even then, when you were in high school, where did you get your materials from, and what were some of your earliest designs?
So my first things were, of course, you know, like I bumped into a bead store at the time. I went to Lane Tech, and there was a bead store in Roscoe Village, and it was called Caravan Beads. And I stumbled upon it, and I went into the bead store, and I just fell in love with, you know, with all the beads. And thankfully, there was a young lady there that was so sweet, and she actually helped me make a bracelet. And I love the way that, you know, the final product. And from there, I was like, you know what, maybe this is something that I can do. And little by little, I started to buy more beads. I started to acquire things from different little shops. And then they would tell me where other bead stores to go, which was another one. It's called String and Strand on Wells here in Chicago as well. And little by little, I made jewelry that sometimes I would make them as gifts. But then my teachers would start to buy the jewelry as a form of showing support. And I was like, oh, my God, this could potentially become a career.
And then, oddly enough, not only was it in high school where you caught the inspiration, but the name of the business also comes from high school.
That is correct. Yeah, because so my favorite fruit is the grapefruit, which I know it's not a very common thing for a lot of people to say. However, when I lived in South America, the grapefruits down there are a bit sweeter. And so when everybody has like this idea of a grapefruit, they think it's like just, you know, tart and sometimes bitter, but no, it's actually very sweet. There's quite a few varieties. But anyways, I would always be eating grapefruit. And one of my teachers, my French teacher, I should say, smelled me one day. She was like, "Bonjour, Monsieur Pamplemousse." And I just loved the way that it sounded. So I just kept it.
Now, when you actually turned the corner into making this a career, where do you source all of your jewelry? And then, you know, how do you feel about things like lab grown diamonds?
So here's the thing. So most of the materials will be from sometimes from my travels or friendships who are the vendors that I've met along the way, because I've been doing this for over 20 years now. I can't believe it to say that. And I've acquired great friendships, and I've been able to travel, you know, around, I would say, between the United States and mostly South America. So I've been able to acquire a couple of things throughout my travels. When it comes to lab-grown diamonds, I think that, you know, they're just as equally as magnificent. It's the same idea. It's the same material. It is the same material. It's just grown in a completely different, it's more of a controlled environment. So I think they're just as equally as magnificent.
Alex Agudo, owner of Mansour Pump La Mousse, 410 South Michigan Avenue in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still to come, an update on a recession indicator that's tied to the unemployment rate.
Cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A key recession indicator has been triggered, warning a potential economic trouble, though the current data shows the economy is still expanding. Joining us to explain is Diane Swank, chief economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And you learn something new every day, Diane, as the host of the Noon Business Hour. And this morning, I saw a number of economists on financial Twitter throwing around something called the SAHM rule, S-A-H-M. What is that?
The SAHM rule is basically if we go above 0.5% from the previous year's low for 3 months in a row on the unemployment rate, it has consistently predicted every recession except for one. In 1976, it had a false signal since the 1950s. So it's used as an early recession indicator. That said, Claudia SAHM herself has cautioned that it's not the rule it once was, especially in the post-pandemic economy. We have a tale of two economies out there where the household survey, which captures the unemployment rate, is lagging by 2 years in terms of the underlying population data. It shows that employment has stagnated and moved nowhere over the last year. At the same time, we've added 2.5 million paychecks in the establishment survey, new paychecks to the economy. That is what's helped to keep the economy afloat. And in fact, we saw an acceleration in growth in the second quarter. So we're in this very weird situation where old rules were meant to be broken, and they have been. But it is an important warning signal to the Fed. Hurricane Beryl also exacerbated losses. We had over 1 million people without electricity the week of this survey, and they lost jobs as well. But the Fed, for its part, is probably feeling a little remorse today that they did not actually cut rates at their July meeting, which we know they discussed. So that suggests to us that they're going to do 0.5% in September. And frankly, the drop in long-term interest rates we're already seeing with mortgage rates coming down will provide some stimulus as we go into the back half of the year, making that elusive soft landing still possible.
I was going to say, is that you don't believe that possibility, the soft landing is off the menu?
It is not off the menu. It is the path to a soft landing is much like the path to gold, paved with tears, setbacks, and self-doubt. And the Fed's feeling a lot of self-doubt today, but it is still extremely possible, and that's the good news.
Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today, and thank you for your insights. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to our stream and skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function. Works both online and with the Odyssey app.